Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you noticed if your mail is slowing down some? Maybe you aren't getting home delivery as often as you normally would. Well, a new Trump-appointed Postmaster General has put in place some measures that could be responsible for that. There's a lot going on at the post office these days, including verbal attacks from President Trump. He calls it a disaster. But millions of Americans do depend on the post office for service every day. What is happening at the post office right now? What is its history? And how did this become a political issue? We're going to be talking about that this afternoon, and we invite you into our conversation. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What are you noticing about your home delivery? How connected do you feel to the post office? Are you concerned about its future? You can also email us your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined by Art Sackler, manager of the Coalition for the 21st Century Postal Service, a postal industry advocacy group. Art Sackler, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be here. Appreciate your having me.
Also with us, Judy Beard, National Political and Legislative Director for the American Postal Workers Union. Judy Beard, good to have you.
Thank you for inviting me to the show, Dave.
Also, we did reach out to the post office to get someone to talk about this issue. They declined to send someone, but they did send us a statement, and we'll get to that later. So let me go first off and ask you, Art Sackler, the Coalition for the 21st Century Postal Service, what do you see right now as the state of the post office?
Well, the Postal Service is pretty challenged on the financial front. It had previous financial stresses before COVID struck, and there's a whole new layer on top of the system, and it really is creaking under the load. And on top of that now, we have changes in operations under the new Postmaster General that from reports we've got, and it's all anecdotal, Dave, no one has all the data yet to really crunch it statistically, but over the last few weeks, mail has been slowing down, packages have been slowing down. It's a real problem, and it appears to be nationwide, again, from the reports we're getting from around our coalition.
Now, your coalition, let's talk about what that is. Some people may think that groups like Amazon and FedEx, that they would be chomping at the bit to take down the post office and be able to provide that service. But is that true?
No. And the reason it isn't true is the fact that the country is so incredibly rural in so many areas and as well has some very difficult to deliver to addresses in inner cities and densely packed suburbs and so forth. No one other than the Postal Service would want to deliver to all of these far-flung places, you know, the really rural areas of Texas, for example, or in Alaska or Wyoming or Western North Carolina, because it is unprofitable, pure and simple. They couldn't make a buck doing it, they won't do it. And in fact, both FedEx and UPS contract out a lot of last mile delivery to the Postal Service for their packages. And Amazon, of course, has a huge footprint within the Postal Service as it is. And of course, all of that has grown with the increase in packages during the coronavirus pandemic.
To be clear, when you say contracting out for the last mile delivery, if you're in West Texas, that last mile delivery is actually last 20, 30, 50 mile delivery.
Or even more. And it's to places not only way out there in West Texas, but at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, in places in Alaska that you can only fly to. I mean, the Postal Service does an absolutely amazing job when you think about where it's got to go every single day.
Judy Beard at the American Postal Workers Union. What is the state of the post office right now?
Well, in the first month of the new postmaster general, he rolled out a plan that severely curtailed the delay of mail. And these changes was unveiled in stand-up talks to the employees and directors coming from managers. And the employees are terribly upset about it because when they go to work every day, they want to, you know, provide prompt and reliable and efficient service to the American people. That's what they've been doing all their employment life. And it's written in the Postal Organization Act of 1970 that they do that. And so now the mail has slowed down based on these directives that included everything from reducing retail hours to removing processing equipment and just ending overtime.
Do you see that these new rules and policies, procedures that were put in place by the new Postmaster General, it's Louis DeJoy, is that his name? And do they seem deliberately put in place to slow down the mail to you, Judy?
We are told that they were put into place to cut costs. And how do you cut costs during a pandemic when the employees are working every single day and they're trying to get the mail out? And many of the employees are home sick or taking care of their loved ones. And you have to do the work, you know, pay overtime or whatever it takes, not to slow down the mail, but to continue to provide the service to the American people. The post office belongs to the American people, and they're expecting their medicines and essentials.
Yeah, people depend on the post office to deliver medicine and household essentials. This seems to be, I mean, I remember when we had the anthrax attacks and how the post office really was at the front line of that and how important it was to have postal workers continue to go on the job and do their work, even though they had no idea what they were handling.
Absolutely. And during this pandemic, in the beginning of March, CDC required a notice to go out to every household, and that's 160 households. And the Postal Service processed those that information that the households needed, and they needed the information in order to stay safe.
So we're talking about the U.S. Postal Service right now. It's in the spotlight in a way that maybe the post office is not happy about, because it's being highly criticized, even verbally attacked by President Trump. He calls it a disaster, and he's attacked the business model. His new appointment as Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, has put in some things they call reforms, but some are saying this is actually an effort to slow down the mail. What are you seeing out there? Are you concerned about the post office? How important it is to you at your home or at your small business? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of the U.S. Postal Service, but this is such an important part of American democracy that it was written into our Constitution. Some could argue that having a robust and incredibly functional post office at the time of the American Revolution was one reason why America was able to win its independence from Britain. We're now joined by Richard John, a professor of history and journalism at Columbia University. He's the author of multiple books, including The American Postal Network, 1792 to 1914 and spreading the news, the American postal system from Franklin to Morse. And Professor Richard John, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How is the Postal Service written into the Constitution and why?
Well, the founders of the Constitution regarded the circulation of information as essential to the perpetuation of the Republic. You had a post office in Great Britain, post office in the United States. So it's a clause right there in the Constitution. Congress established post office, post roads. The big change came 1792, just after the adoption of the Constitution, when Congress took control of the institution, took charge of its expansion, designation of new routes. That's how we get expansion to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and to Texas and Alaska. It also mandated that newspapers would be circulated in the mail at very low cost. Every newspaper go in the mail. George Washington was in favor of that. So was James Madison, who shepherded that bill through Congress. We also had a guarantee of privacy. No one could open your letters. That's the civic mandate for the post office, 1792, that some might say we're seeing unraveling today.
Yeah, the post office and the service and the privacy of the mail has frequently been at the center of a lot of questions of individual rights.
That's right. In fact, one of the first references to the term privacy was in the context of what was called the inviolability of the mail in 1840s. The idea that every American should have access to information about public affairs, essential for the conception of the institution as the founders understood it. Now, we no longer use the post office to get our information about public affairs. We have the internet, many other means, but that civic identity is absolutely central. It's in the DNA of the institution as the founders understood it.
Well, still, we have direct mail, which is politicians use that all the time, particularly on the hyper-local level, in order to reach voters and to target certain issues. So it's still pretty much there.
That's absolutely right. But it's no longer the main vehicle for the circulation of political information to court. That is to say, newspapers, if you're in a small town, you got your newspaper through the post office. And just as we have direct mail, you can think of the mail-in balloting as an obvious extension of that. It's something the founders would have understood should be safe, should be secure, should be reliable. Foundational to our identity is having elections that everybody can trust.
All right. So, Professor Richard John, we'll be leaning on you for more background about the history of the Postal Service. We won't be asking you about political questions, but just about, you know, what is this all about, and what role has the Postal Service played in American history, American democracy? But right now, let's get to some callers. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Carol is on the phone. Hey, Carol, thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I love your program.
Thank you.
I think Benjamin Franklin is spinning in his grave. And I want to do everything I can to support our postal system. It's not a business. It's a service provided by our country, and it's one of the best services we have. And I've heard that the new Postmaster General is maybe aiming to privatize our system, and we need to keep it for the people. But also would like to just add, I mailed 3 letters and 2 packages on Tuesday. Now, this is Thursday. I got a call today that my letter had been received, one of them. I don't know about the others. And yesterday, Wednesday, just 24 hours after I mailed a package, it was received. And so I think our postal workers are doing a fantastic job, and I support them 100%.
Carol, thank you for your tremendous call. Appreciate that. A lot there. So first off, I'm going to go back to Richard John, just talk about Ben Franklin being the first Postmaster General. He could have done so many things at that time in his life. You know, he was an ambassador and a lawmaker and publisher. Why was he interested in becoming a Postmaster General?
Well, he had been the Deputy Postmaster General under the British government. In fact, he spent decades of his life in London. It was a pretty cushy job. It was a sinecure. And before that, he'd been the postmaster of Philadelphia. So in some ways, it's an honorific an honorary position, and most of the work was done by his son-in-law, Richard Bache, and I'm sorry to say that Richard Bache was not the most able of our postmaster generals. So the institution really was not as central to public life in the 1770s and 80s as it would become following the adoption of the Constitution. But Franklin's basic vision of the institution as promoting commerce, as facilitating the circulation of information, would be very important when the founders got around writing the foundational legislation for the post office in the 1790s.
Now, let's talk about the question of privatization that Carol brought up. Art Sackler at a coalition for a 21st century postal service. What are the concerns, pros and cons for privatization?
Well, I'm not sure how many pros there really are, Dave, but there are a lot of cons. First of all, you would be unlikely to be able to sell or spin off or otherwise dispose of the postal system from the government. Nobody would want to take it because it is not profitable without making some radical changes that folks, particularly out in rural areas, would be extremely unhappy about. And if you look to examples of other countries that have privatized, places such as Finland and the Netherlands and Britain, it takes about 10 years on average. It means less service, higher rates, and the legacy costs, pensions, benefits, that sort of thing, remain with the government. So there would be no savings to the United States government, at least not in the short term. And if you were to try to sell off or otherwise spin off the Postal Service, you'd probably have a competition for very dense routes that could be delivered profitably. But then you'd have kind of a Baudelaireized system around the country where you've got one provider handing off to a second provider and perhaps to a third provider, and the whole organization would be a mess. This is a huge country. We have 47% of all the mail in the world, and you just can't take a privatization model and transpose it here. It won't work.
Judy Beard at the American Postal Workers Union. These people say that the post office should be run like a business. It should at least break even, that this is not something that the American taxpayer should subsidize. It should be able to stand on its own. What's wrong with that?
Well, the Postal Service is a service. It is not a business. And it's there to serve the American people. Currently, the rates for mailings are affordable to all Americans. And if they privatized the Postal Service, which came up in 2018 in the President's Task Force report, as well as the OMB, Office of Management and Budgets report, to privatize the Postal Service is totally ridiculous. A service that is not paid out of taxpayer dollars that gets its money from the product that they sell.
And so you think people should think about this as a service that benefits the entirety of the nation, even if you may not be getting that much mail? Maybe you should write more letters then. But it's just something that we like having a school system.
Absolutely. It's a service for the American people. And in some areas of the country, they don't even have broadband. So it's the only way for them to communicate. It binds the nation together.
Let's go to Bonnie on the phones. Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I just wondered if they could talk about how the requirements for the pension fund for postal workers has affected its financial stability.
All right. Thank you for that, Bonnie. In 2006, the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act was signed into law by George W. Bush, and that's when the post office stopped being profitable. So, Art Sackler, what's all that about?
Well, that was an effort by Congress to try to make sure that the health care benefits for retirees and other annuitants from the Postal Service were pre-funded. That means loading the fund up in advance so that as the Postal Service gradually declined in size, that future ratepayers wouldn't have to pay an extraordinary amount of money for that. So it was well intended, but the consequences were both unintended and terrible.
It's interesting to note at this time, this is when email is rising, and this is before Amazon, before we had all these package delivery, and people were wondering about the future if there was actually a need for a post office.
Yeah, exactly. And so what happened was as a matter of, you and maybe your listeners are aware of the unduly complicated so-called scoring system in Congress. As an artifact of that scoring system, the Postal Service was required to pay $5.5 billion, more or less, every year for the first 10 years after the act you talked about was signed into law in 2006. And so then beyond that, amortize whatever was left. They were looking ahead 75 years. They were going to be providing benefits basically for the unborn. As a result, in the first decade plus of the Postal Service after the 2006 law, it racked up losses in total of around $68 billion. $55 billion of those losses are directly attributed just to this one thing, to pre-funding retiree health benefits. That's something, by the way, that no one else in the government at any level, federal, state, local, is required to do. It's something that no private sector company or other entity is required to do. Yet the Postal Service was, and at a huge amount of money, every year. And, one other quick thing, Dave, 2006, when the law you mentioned was signed by President Bush, was literally the best year in the Postal Service's entire 243-year history. So George Bush signs the bill on December 20th of 2006. 3 months later, Steve Jobs introduces the iPhone, and the race out of the system was on. And then it was accelerated and exacerbated by the Great Recession. The Postal Service and its ecosystem was hit every bit as hard as every other industry segment in the country. So it has not been affordable. The Postal Service hasn't been pre-funding, hasn't made those payments since 2011. And the result has been a huge adverse impact to the system.
It was passed by a lame duck Congress and passed with a voice vote only. So it makes me wonder if those representatives knew that they were doing something a little slimy. We're going to take another break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. How are you doing with the Postal Service these days? What are your concerns? Would you vote by mail if you could? What are your questions about that? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
President Trump has issued over 400 immigration executive actions. Many of the changes are so great they might not be reversible if he's not reelected.
There's just no way that a new administration would have the political will and resources to undo each of these changes.
how President Trump has dismantled and reconstructed the U.S. immigration system, next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the United States Postal Service. Our guests are Art Sackler. He's the manager of the Coalition for a 21st Century Postal Service, a postal industry advocacy group. Judy Beard, National Political and Legislative Director for the American Postal Workers Union. And Richard John, a professor of history and journalism at Columbia University, author of multiple books about the history of the Postal Service. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And JC is on the phones. And JC, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
David, I love your show. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I love the Postal Service, but I have one comment and then I have a question. My statement is that we do not need Saturday deliveries. All we get on Saturday is junk mail. So just put it out, you know, just stop that. I think that will save us 15%.
JC, thank you for that. And so Judy Beard, what about stopping Saturday delivery?
Many workers across the country work Monday through Friday. So they want the Saturday post offices to stay open so that they can take care of the business that they have to take care of. So we think that Saturday delivery is very valuable to the country. In fact, the country is now delivering 7 days a week in many, many cases.
So actually ending Saturday delivery would cause the mail to back up and more work for the postal workers for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
That is true, but it will also, because we serve the American people and we believe that the American people want Saturday delivery. They want prompt service. And prompt service is not holding on to the mail, but delivering it as soon as possible.
We got an email from Mark. My business, Guitar Techs, relies on all the major shippers. And until recently, I've been satisfied. Lately, the U.S. Postal Service hasn't been as dependable. As of July 21st, we shipped a package to a P.O. box in Pennsylvania. USPS was our only option. It cost nearly $300 to ship a package that would normally have cost less than $100. It finally arrived yesterday, August 5th. According to tracking information, the package sat in San Antonio for 6 days before it left. It's supposed to take 3 to 5 business days, but it took over 2 weeks. We've never had these problems or delays or tracking information. It seems suspect. So Art Sackler, does seem like there is slowdowns.
Well, it does, and that tracks with our anecdotal information that I mentioned to you before. Your listeners, I'm sure, are very well aware of how important the Postal Service is to everybody around the country. What they may not be aware of is that it is the hub of an industry that generates about $1.6 trillion in revenues and employs more than 7 million workers, and that doesn't include the Postal Service itself. In Texas alone, there are nearly 633,000 workers and about $138 billion in revenues that are generated. It's an enormous industry where the Postal Service is, the very heart of it. And for all of those industries, and that includes not only mailers of every kind, but shippers and packagers, big e-commerce companies, and the printing industry, the paper industry, technology supplies to those folks, and more than anything else, a lot of large businesses, but a vast number of medium-sized and small businesses everywhere, all depend on the Postal Service. And for them, delivery is, quite apart from how important it is for the entire country, it may be a total business lifeline, and certainly is for small businesses. So what happens to the mail is and certainly to packages is not just, you know, how does it maintain tying the nation together and doing so effectively, but how does it function for business with all these jobs depending on it? And I guess I should add that the numbers I've cited to you are 2019 numbers. No one has a handle yet on how badly COVID may have hit our industry. But, you know, one last thing. I mean, the size of this industry is about 7% of GDP. And for those, since we're in Texas again, that's roughly the size of the petroleum industry. So it's all of these folks that work for this huge, huge array of businesses are very dependent on the Postal Service.
Another caller, Deb. Hi, Deb. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just noticed in the last couple of weeks that the postal delivery service hasn't been as reliable. I have a P.O. box in downtown San Antonio, and today I just received a piece of mail that was postmarked July 13th.
Mm. Deb, thank you for giving us that report. Appreciate that. Richard John, professor of history and journalism at Columbia University. You've written a lot about the history of the Postal Service, and it's gone through a lot of changes over the years. There was a long period where people could bank at the post office. How did that work?
Well, that was an early 20th century reform. There were many, many immigrants from Eastern Europe who did not trust the banking system. Administrators in the Wilson administration, building on a movement going back to the 1890s and before, thought it would be a good idea for them to be able to deposit money in a secure government institution, which they would trust as they would not trust banks. And for the next, I think up through the 1960s, millions of Americans deposited small sums. There's a proposal to bring back postal banking today. About 5% of the American people do not have access to checking or basic banking facilities. That's the kind of thing the post office has done very, very well, low overhead, for a very long period of time. It's got a track record. We're not talking about something new here. And that's one of the really discouraging aspects of the current developments, because the institution really has been a shining star in our public infrastructure for a very, very long time.
So the establishment of bank service at the post office passed by Congress in 1910 was a reaction to the 1907 panic where the banking system collapsed, and this gave people a place they feel like they could trust, that they could keep their money.
That's right, because they didn't trust the banking system, and they, in many instances, couldn't get access. The post office has many more outlets than banks, and therefore it made it easy for often poor Americans to get access to credit that way, which they couldn't otherwise.
So this would be a alternative to these high-interest payday loan facilities now.
That's right. The proposal is on the table. Elizabeth Warren is behind it. And I think it has real promise.
Art Sackler, manager for the Coalition for a 21st Century Postal Service. Is something like this, you know, would y'all advocate for that?
Well, the pros of doing banking for the unbanked and underbanked are not only the services for them, but an additional revenue stream for the Postal Service. But the concern we would have, the yellow flag, if you will, is that the Postal Service is an absolutely enormous, complicated enterprise. And would it have the ability to focus on another line of business entirely and still get the job done that it needs to get done on its core mission? We're a little concerned about that. And of course, the executives at the Postal Service don't know anything about banking, and the folks who are working at the windows in post offices and elsewhere, they don't know anything about banking. And so everybody would have to be taught, and they would have to kind of start from scratch on that and then blend it into all of their other responsibilities. That worries us, as a matter of fact, about whether you would end up with not a very good job on both sides of that coin.
And Judy Beard, American Postal Workers Union, what's your take?
I think that is an excellent way to bring in additional income and serve the American public at the same time. I mean, we can all remember the Pony Express. I mean, we might not be, you know, that old, but we heard of the Pony Express, and we learned along the way as, you know, the Postal Services became more modern. So the Postal Service certainly could handle postal banking. Right now, we cash government checks. You can go into the postal office and get a package delivered and use your credit card to make the payment. So, yes, I think it's something that the American people love to have, especially in those areas where they don't have access to banking.
Yeah, and banking now is something that if you don't have a lot of income, it doesn't really make sense for you. So people turn towards these high charge, high fees, high interest rate type facilities on corners, and they get to do their business. But it seems like providing people an alternative, which is what Senator Elizabeth Warren is looking to do, would be a way to go in that regard. This is something that people are floating, and who knows if that will happen. Depends on, I guess, on who we elect to Congress and to the White House. We're talking about the United States Postal Service. When we come back, we'll talk more about what's in store for the post office. There is this a Postal Service Emergency Assistance Act that's being talked about in Washington, D.C. What's in that, and how could that change things for the Postal Service? Also, would the post office really be capable of doing mass mail-in voting, which has been talked about? Could it actually handle that load? If you have a question or comment, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We did reach out to the post office to ask if they wanted to bring someone on board to talk about these issues. We did get a statement instead from the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. It's very long. We'll have it posted on our website. But the first paragraph is the Postal Service is in a financially unsustainable position stemming from substantial declines in mail volume and a broken business model. We currently are unable to balance our cost with available funding sources to fulfill both of our universal service mission and other legal obligations. Because of this, the Postal Service has experienced over a decade of financial losses with no end in sight. We face an impending liquidity crisis. Now, Art Sackler with the Coalition for a 21st Century Postal Service, we hear from Donald Trump all the time. He's rages that the post office is a disaster and that they are not making any money by sending these Amazon packages. Is that the business model that's broken?
Well, I don't think certainly that part of the business model is broken. As a matter of fact, the Postal Service makes a huge amount of money from packages, including quite a bit of money just from Amazon. They're supposed to return about 5.5% of the costs of the postal system, you know, the institutional costs, things like post offices and so forth that you can't allocate out to different parts of the mail. So they return that kind of contribution to the system above and beyond what it costs to move a package from point A to point B. And last year, they returned over $8 billion. That's $8 billion in overhead, which corresponds to profit in the private sector. So packages are contributing enormously to the postal system. No, we don't think that the model is as broken as some do. Surely some things have to be reformed and changed, but there's not been a coalescing around any of the ideas, no matter where they're coming from, in years about what to do to try to help the Postal Service. beyond lightening its debt load. You mentioned the Postal Service Emergency Assistance Act. I'm prepared to discuss that when you're ready. But
sure, go for it.
Okay. Our group very strongly supports this bill. It's a bipartisan, common sense, balanced measure that would give the Postal Service some badly needed financial support. And it does so in a way that blends the priorities of the two parties. You wouldn't think that dealing with the Postal Service should be a partisan thing, because it's popular with more than 90%.
It's like a pothole issue. Either, you know, you want these things fixed. You want the Postal Service to work. You don't want it to be red or blue.
Exactly. And everybody wants it to work. But in terms of getting to the solution, there's a difference. And, you know, just very quickly, right now, the Republican Senate plan has nothing in it to help the Postal Service. Over in the House, the HEROES Act has $25 billion in direct cash infusion and other funding for vote by mail and other such items. This bill, which is co-sponsored by Susan Collins of Maine and Dianne Feinstein of California, and then another 14 of their colleagues split evenly between the parties, would set up a fund of $25 billion, but wouldn't just hand it to the Postal Service. Instead, the Postal Service would have to go to the Postal Regulatory Commission and certify that whatever funds it was drawing down from that $25 billion fund would be to reimburse it for COVID-driven losses. Now, that's something that those on the Republican side who would see it as a bailout to just hand it money could be satisfied. While on the other side of the coin, the Democrats who want to give the Postal Service a lot of money would see that at least, and that, by the way, that view is driven by COVID losses as well, would see that the Postal Service would indeed get its COVID-related losses recompensed. So there are a couple of other provisions in the bill that we think are good too, but that's the main one. And again, the industry very strongly supports trying to thread that needle between the two parties.
Now, you mentioned politics, that the U.S. Postal Service has now become a political issue. Some people say that has to do with the fact that there's a drive to vote by mail during this pandemic. And Trump and many of his acolytes want people to go vote in person on those computers. And so people wonder, like, what's up with that? Richard John, professor of history and journalism at Columbia University, voting by mail, is that a new thing? How long has that been happening with the Postal Service?
Well, in California, Oregon, Washington, they've been voting by mail for some time, decades, I think, that long. Other parts of the country, relatively new. But the issue with President Trump has now become complicated because he's been duly informed that if he opposes voting by mail in Florida, that's going to significantly decrease the number of Republicans who are going to be voting. So recently he made the quite remarkable statement that Florida is safe to vote by mail, but not other states. There's a recent report, 15% of Trump voters in Florida, 12% of Pennsylvania, and 10% in Michigan said they'd be less likely to vote at all if they got a ballot in the mail. Nevada is going to be a real test case here, because that's one of the very few states where every citizen, every voter, rather, has been sent a ballot. So we've been doing it for some time, but it's very much a state-by-state matter, and it's getting increasingly difficult for the president, who to my surprise, is opposed to postal mail-in voting, because you'd think in many states it would help his constituency. It's a rural, urban issue. That it's an issue that's increasingly difficult for the Republican Party to take a stand on, because he's going to have to say, well, it's okay in Florida, but it's not okay in Nevada, or it's okay here, it's not okay there. Working very effectively, and by the way, there have been studies of the effectiveness of mail-in voting, and there's virtually no fraud. That is a red herring. That's not a legitimate issue. That's been thoroughly canvassed in the past.
Judy Beard with the American Postal Workers Union, can you tell me if, because one of the claims by President Trump is that the Postal Service would not be able to handle getting all of these mail-in ballots. Do you think that that would be a challenge and something that was insurmountable for the Postal Service to be able to accomplish?
The Postal Service is ready to handle vote-by-mail. They have been handling vote-by-mail for years, and back in the 2016 election, a fourth of the voters voted by mail. So the employees are ready, and the administration is ready to handle vote-by-mail and can do so flawlessly.
Art Sackler, what happens if we just let things go the way they are right now, allow the Postal Service to operate at a deficit and not pass this Postal Service Emergency Assistance Act?
Well, the Postal Service has enough cash on hand to make it into next year, depending on what happens. Right now, they're experiencing a serious drop in mail volume and have been for months. That costs them a lot of money. Fortunately, those revenues have been offset because, and this will come as no surprise to anyone, there's been a spike in package mail, you know, with the prescriptions and other health products and staples and groceries and PPE and government stimulus checks, and the list just goes on and on about what the Postal Service has to deliver. The package side of the house has been huge. So revenues have kind of evened out. But that doesn't take account of how much additional expense the Postal Service has to replace temporarily or permanently the workers who are out with COVID or quarantining because someone else is sick with COVID. Doesn't cover all of the, you know, remotely the huge additional transportation costs the Postal Service is experiencing. You know, they make great use of commercial airline cargo space, and with the plunge in airline traffic, there goes a lot of the airlift capacity, and so that's a lot more expense on chartering planes, sending mail by rail or by truck, or whatever it might be. A lot of workaround expenses. And then, of course, you got to sanitize all 31,000 facilities the Postal Service has. And doing that on a frequent enough basis is a huge expense, plus PPE for all of the postal workers, including, and, you know, and our hats are off to the hundreds of thousands of them on the front lines risking themselves every day to get this job done.
Yeah, so it's a necessary part of American democracy and commerce and our way of life. Those postal trucks, those things have pretty long in the tooth these days. How old are they? They're like 20 years old, the whole fleet? It's time to replace all those with electric vehicles. I want to thank all of our guests. Richard John, professor of history and journalism at Columbia University, author of many books about the Postal Service. Art Sackler, manager of the Coalition for a 21st Century Postal Service. And Judy Beard, she's the national political and legislative director of the American Postal Workers Union. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.